The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11.
Now, Geelong Sustainability is running a forum, and it's about our future here in Geelong in terms of energy and climate change, and it's going to be held at the Geelong West Town Hall on the 21st of April from 7 till 9pm. And pleased to say that here in the studio we've got one of the presenters of that forum. Greg Foister is the Media and Content Manager at Environment Victoria, and he's a bit of a local. You grew up in Drysdale, Greg, and now you live in Geelong as well, and you were a journalist.
Yes. I've worked as a journalist for a while, and then I moved into the not-for-profit space working on environment issues, and Environment Victoria's a peak charity in Victoria, has been going since the 1960s and has advocated for national parks and all sorts of things.
So this forum that's coming up, what are the key messages that you're trying to get across?
Well, one of the reasons for the forum is that there are two gas import terminals proposed for Geelong, and a lot of people don't actually know about them or what they are. So they're massive big pieces of gas infrastructure that would import gas from overseas or Australia, bring it into Geelong, and then put it into the gas market. And what I'm talking about at the forum is whether we need these terminals, why they are proposed, and what some of the environmental impacts are of those terminals. Because there was one actually proposed in Western Port Bay that the Victorian government recently rejected purely on environmental grounds because of the impacts it would have on the local bay, and we're looking at seeing those in Geelong.
So is your concern about the gas import more about the environmental impacts, or is it more about you saying that you'd like us to transition away from fossil fuels?
It's both. So firstly, we need to look at what is the justification for these terminals. These terminals are very big boats. They're about 300 metres long, so it's about almost as long as Cunningham Pier. It's massive. That would be permanently sited in Corio Bay, and it would import gas at minus 160 degrees, and then it would suck up seawater and put chlorine into the seawater and circulate that through pipes to reheat the gas, and then dump all that chlorinated seawater back into the bay, potentially millions and millions of litres of this stuff every day, to reheat the gas. So that's how they work. They use seawater to reheat the gas. And what we know with the proposal for one in Western Port Bay is that it was deemed to be so environmentally damaging that the planning minister rejected it, purely on environmental grounds, because it would affect all the sea life in the bay, it would affect fish stocks, all sorts of things. And so we're concerned about it from that perspective. And then we're also concerned about it from the perspective that we need to be switching from gas to renewable energy, because it's now the case that it's cheaper and it's better for the environment to switch from gas to efficient electric appliances like reverse cycle air conditioners. Even a lot of industrial processes can be switched to electrical alternatives. And so it's just sort of like it's the wrong direction. It locks in a fossil fuel and further emissions when we need to be switching to clean renewable energy sources.
And have you made representations to the planning minister, and have you had any feedback as a response?
So Environment Victoria was heavily involved in the environmental impact statement for the gas import terminal proposed at Western Port. That was a long process. An environmental impact statement can take a year, and then there's an inquiry, and then there's a report, and then the minister makes a decision. And the proposals in Geelong are from Viva Energy in Corio Bay, and then there's another one from a company called Vopak off Avalon, and they still have to go through that environmental impact statement. And through that, we'll learn about the effect that it will have on the local area. There's going to be some localised dredging, so we don't know what effect that will have yet. And these are also situated very close to something known as a Ramsar wetland, which is a wetland of international significance. And that was one of the reasons why the Western Port Bay proposal was rejected, because it was in one of these types of wetlands. So these are very close to those types of wetlands, and we're not sure the impact that will have either.
And I see here that there is some prediction that we will have a gas shortfall in Victoria in winter of 2023. Is that right?
No, it's no longer correct, actually. So these gas terminals were based on forecasts. They've been proposed for a while, and they're based on forecasts of a gas shortfall in 2023. That comes from the Australian Energy Market Operator, which is the agency that runs the electricity and gas market in Australia, in southeast Australia. And their latest forecast came out in March, and that forecast shows that pressure has eased, mainly because one of these gas import terminals is already approved and will be built in Port Kembla in New South Wales, and that will supply gas to the southeast market. So that means that there won't be any chance of a shortfall before 2026, so long as that gas terminal in New South Wales is approved. And then afterwards, the Victorian government has put in place all these policies to reduce gas demand by helping low-income households switch from gas heaters to electric heaters. And that's going to make a huge difference because a lot of our gas demand is actually heating and hot water. And by the time those policies come into place, which will be over the next 4 years, it will have reduced gas demand enough that we believe there won't be a shortfall, and we've got some gas analysts who have done those calculations. So it's sort of, there's now enough time to avoid the shortfall through smarter policies, which are reducing gas demand and helping people get onto, you know, efficient electric appliances through government rebates and save money. And it means we won't actually need these massive gas infrastructure projects in Geelong, which could have an environmentally damaging effect on the bay.
Is electric better even if you're, say, using brown coal, which is, I think, where the majority of our energy comes from here in Victoria, electrical energy? Is it still better than gas in that case?
That was always the concern with the environmental impact of gas. So the idea, you know, maybe 15, 20 years ago was that brown coal, which is what we burn in the Latrobe Valley in Victoria, is so polluting that it's better to be using gas than to using electricity. What's changed since then is that we've had a lot more renewable energy come into the system, and the projections are for heaps more renewable energy in Victoria because there's a renewable energy target and the Victorian government's been really strong on that. And so that means that progressively electricity is getting cleaner and cleaner and cleaner and cleaner. And if you put those projections into the future, you're better off investing in electric infrastructure than gas infrastructure. The other thing we've learned is that gas is actually way more polluting and way worse for the climate than we previously realised. And that's because a lot of it leaks into the atmosphere. And when it leaks, it's methane, which is a more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. It's many, many times more potent. And there have been an increasing number of studies showing that the leakage rate is actually much larger than anyone previously assumed. Once it gets beyond about 3%, it's worse than coal for in terms of climate change. And so there's just increasingly more and more studies saying, well, actually, this stuff is leaking a lot. It's leaking at multiple points in the supply chain. And we are expecting to see more of those studies because it's a field of interest now. In which case we need to really get off gas because it could be making much more impact on climate change than we previously thought.
How much renewable energy would we need to add to our grid in this state to offset maybe even this one or two proposed gas terminals that you're talking about? But I suppose even more broadly, if we wanted to get rid of gas, would that be quite a big undertaking?
It would. I don't have those figures in front of me. I can say a couple of things about the potential environmental impact of the terminals based on the one that was proposed in Western Port Bay, because they might be a similar scale. That would have produced about 8 million tonnes of greenhouse gas emissions when the gas was imported and burnt in people's cookers and at home and in industrial systems. 8 million tonnes is about half of a brown coal power station. So there's a significant environmental footprint associated with these things. There's a lot of emissions from them. In terms of the renewables needed to replace that, I'm not sure, but there's been a lot of studies now saying that it is possible to get to 70%, 90%, even 100% renewables because of new technology in batteries, actually. The batteries are getting cheaper and they allow you to provide power all the time to back up renewables. And, you know, it used to be the case that people would argue that gas was the transition fuel. Now batteries are fulfilling that role, and they're getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, whereas gas is getting more expensive. So if you look at the long-term trajectory of where things are heading, it just doesn't make sense to be investing in a massive gas import terminal that could potentially ruin so many things that we like about Corio Bay.
How would you like to see the batteries aspect set up? Because I know the government is building a big battery out here near Geelong. So that's one approach, having the massive sort of centralised system. But I know, alternatively, those that can afford it are buying things like the Tesla Powerwall to power their own home. Is it better to decentralise or for the government to buy that big infrastructure, in your view?
You're probably going to need both. The best case renewable energy transitions in the world have happened in Europe, and they've really focused on community-owned energy. So we'd like to see more community-owned battery systems and wind farms, because then the benefits spread to the local community. It's not just some big business, you know, or multinational business getting the benefits and the profits. You can actually set up a community-owned battery system or solar farm or wind farm and reap the financial rewards in the local community. So we think that model has a lot of potential.
And what's the cost like if we were to say to people, well, we're not going to have gas anymore, we're going to run this off electrical appliances and run it off renewable energy? Do you know what the costs might be comparatively with gas against them having to pay for the electrical appliances?
I don't know those figures, but in principle, we can say that renewable energy is the cheapest form of electricity in the system, and that's because when the sun's shining and the wind's blowing or whatever your form is, it's essentially free. It doesn't have a fuel cost, and so it just goes into the market at a very low price, or essentially free. So it's the cheapest form. It's got the lowest levelized cost of energy is what it's called, and that takes into account capital costs as well. So I'm not sure about the answer to your specific question, but in general, your renewable energy is going to be cheaper, and it's getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
In terms of Geelong, how do you think we go on environmental issues? And Geelong Sustainability is running this forum, which is coming up, and I'm assuming as part of Environmental Victoria, you go right across the state. So are we more environmentally aware here in Geelong or less, or how do we compare in your experience?
I'm not sure, actually. I think that Geelong has so much potential because we are the gateway. We're a port city. We're a gateway to the Western Victorian wind farms. Victoria's second largest city, and there's just so much potential. You know, Geelong can be so much have so much more industry than it currently has. It can really grow, I think, and have a bigger impact, you know, culturally and in terms of the economy in Victoria. So, yeah, we see huge potential for, like, renewable energy in Geelong. I don't know about, you know, I see a lot of really great sustainability behaviour around me, but we've never done any kind of comparison. I mean, personally, I live in Geelong. I think it's an amazing place and it's got so much potential.
Fantastic. Well, you'll be speaking at this forum coming up at the Geelong West Town Hall. Have they told you much about the format that it's going to run? Will you be taking questions from the floor?
Yeah, so we'll be doing 5-minute presentations. It's quite a number of people. It's about 8 of us. And we'll be talking about particular topics. I'll be talking on whether there's a gas shortfall and then also these gas import terminal proposals.
Yes.
And then there will also be, I believe, the Minister for Energy and Environment, Lily D'Ambrosio, will be there. And essentially we'll be presenting for 5 minutes and then taking questions.
And if people want to book, I think they can do that through Geelong Sustainability, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And do you know if it's going to be online in this sort of era of Zoom meetings now?
Definitely. I'm not sure if it will be live streamed or if it will be
cut
up. Go
back and watch the recording.
But it will definitely be available online.
Well, thanks very much for coming in. Good luck with the forum. I'm sure you'll have a very lively conversation there with all of the participants. So thanks for coming into the studio to tell us about it.
Thanks for having me.
Greg Foister with us there, the Media and Content Manager at Environment Victoria.
The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.